Hey, I'm Scott, and I'm an American in Bangkok, back from Cambodia. And as soon as I got back, I got a message from one of my subscribers. I'm in Starbucks. There's one guy in here besides me. He's either doped up, but he's on the drugs or something, because he's like knocked the fuck out. But anyway, I just got back, and this guy sent me a message with a link in it to a BBC article called "The Phuket Property Nightmare," and I'm gonna read it, okay? Because I've got all the time I want. This is a podcast, you know. So this is not on YouTube, at least not this version. So I'm going to read it. It says, the sparkling seas and warm beaches of Phuket are a magnet for sun-seeking holidaymakers and increasingly for foreigners seeking a comfortable and cost-efficient retirement. For more than 100,000 foreigners have settled on the island, though some now bitterly regret it. British expat Ian Rance and Irishman Colin Vard are now living almost penniless with their children on the outskirts of Bangkok as they struggle against overwhelming odds to recover properties they bought in Phuket. Both men lost all their... I'm about to smack this guy. Both men, how dare he? Both men lost all their investments through frauds that neither of them imagined were possible. I made my money in England and had enough to retire, I thought. I was looking for a place that was warm, a place that had some rule of law, where I could live in safety and peace, says Rance, a chartered surveyor and professional arbitrator from Hertfordshire who arrived in Phuket in 2000. When I came to Thailand on a trip to Australia, it sort of seemed to fit the bill. In 2001, Ian met and married a Thai woman called Suda and went on to have three children with her. The prime minister at the time, Thaksin Shinawatra, had started a program called Thai Elite, through which he hoped to attract wealthy foreigners to settle by allowing them to own small amounts of land, something not normally permitted under Thai law. Encouraged by this, Rance began investing in property, buying two houses and eventually a restaurant and two pieces of land. But the Thai elite scheme never took off, so in the end he did what thousands of foreigners did. He put the properties either in the name of the company he had already formed to run his consultancy business or in the name of his wife. The family home was in his wife's name, but leased to him on a 30-year lease. The company was nominally Thai-owned, but Rance, as director, had majority voting rights. Nothing could happen to the company's assets without his approval. He was advised by local lawyers that this was legally quite safe. But unbeknown to him, in July 2008, Suda began transferring the properties out of the company. In September, she also removed Rance as a director. Not good. On paper, none of this should have been possible. In practice, all she had to do was to forge her husband's signature. The land office in Phuket, where property transfers are formalized, was willing to accept a simple forged power of attorney from Rance to change ownership of properties worth hundreds of thousands of pounds and to cancel his 30-day lease on their home. To change the control of the company, the forged signature had to be notarized by a lawyer, but that presented no problem. A local lawyer did this willingly, without Rance being present. When the BBC confronted the lawyer about this, he admitted the signature was his, but claimed it was normal practice in Phuket. The Thai Lawyers' Council has since told the BBC that this is not true, that this is a serious violation of their code of conduct. But Rance's attempts to sue the lawyer have gone nowhere. This article gets me pissed off, you know, really. He only spotted the fraud in July 2010 when checking his company's tax status. He discovered that all five properties worth well over £1 million had been stolen. What began then was, he says, a nightmare period for him. His wife ran away. Four men came into his house and threatened his life if he did not get out of Phuket. His wife phoned him and told him that they would kidnap his children if he did not leave the house immediately. Gun crime and murder are not uncommon in Phuket, and Rance decided to flee to Bangkok with the three young boys. It was a terrible, terrible time. I really had no time, thinking I was going to be shot or the kids would be kidnapped. My first thought was protect the family, try and get some evidence, and get a lawyer on board as quickly as possible. The evidence Rance has amassed is staggering. Document after document shows the same land agent and two money lenders transferring the properties back and forth to his ex-wife in a form of pawnbrokering, where she was in effect borrowing at astronomical rates of interest using the properties as collateral. Rance believes she was being pressured, I guess is the word it should be, by relatives to raise the cash. He believes she received only a fraction of the property's value. She was arrested in 2010 and now is serving a four-year prison sentence. This just goes to show you how stupid people can be here and, you know, criminals can be. Because here she is, she's got kids. She's got kids with this guy. She's been married for 7 years. She's selling or pawning her property back and forth. She's getting a pittance of what it's worth. And now she's in jail. It just doesn't make sense to me, you know. I mean, first of all, she's a thief. Second of all, she's a stupid thief, which is even worse. Let's see here. But nothing has happened to any of the other parties linked to the fraud. Rance has filed 9 criminal and civil suits against them. He has had to travel to Phuket for every hearing, paying for himself, a lawyer, and a translator. Hearings which are usually many months apart and sometimes canceled at the last minute. Worse, one of the money lenders has filed a perjury case against Rance, claiming that he knew about the fraud all along. This has resulted in Rance's passport being confiscated, and he is now obliged to report to the police every month in Phuket. Ugh, I couldn't imagine being involved in something like this. Seriously. Let me just finish reading this. All right. Over the 5 years, Rance estimates he has spent the equivalent of £200,000 on legal fees and other costs relating to his legal battle. The only case he has won resulted in the imprisonment of his ex-wife and the restoration of his company directorship. Yet the same judge ruled that he had no right to sue the moneylenders for these stolen properties because he had not been a director of the company at the time. See, I don't understand that, because here he is. He was the director. They stole the directorship from him. And because of that, legally, he should have remained the director. But apparently not, because the judge said he didn't have the right to sue. Rance has hired 5 lawyers, some of whom he says have overcharged him and sometimes deliberately sabotaged his cases. He's had to petition the Ministry of Justice to find a lawyer he can trust. Fuck me, man. Poor guy. There are many foreigners who have filed cases similar to Ian Rance, said Sirin Bumrungpon, who heads the Phuket Anti-Corruption Network, a campaign group. In many cases, In many cases, the lawyers they hire actually work for the other side for more money. The reason most of them lose is because of corrupt, incompetent lawyers and the failure of law enforcement officers to do their job properly. Unfucking believable. Okay, so let me just say one thing about lawyers. First of all, I don't know anybody who says, well, other than lawyers, and I got nothing against them personally. I had a guy, you know, listen, a long time ago, I had a drunk driving. Definitely not proud of that one. But I hired a lawyer. His name was Michael Goldstein. Very good lawyer. He took good care of me, worked with me, and he got me to where I basically didn't get thrown in jail. You know, I mean, I don't even remember what. I think I paid a fine. Had to do some course, and I was on probation or whatever. But I learned my lesson from that. But he was a good lawyer. He was a guy, he definitely helped me. He wasn't out to rip me off or rob me. He just, he did his job, and that was it. I paid him his money, he did his job, and end of story. And years later, I talked to him and asked him how he was doing and everything, and, he of me, and it was a great relationship. It worked for both of us, as it should. However, when I was in Thailand, I had two things happen to me where I needed a lawyer. The first was when I had my fall from the fourth floor during a fire, and I was in the hospital, and the owner of the place that I was living, where the fire took place, which I'm not going to name the place right now, he came into the, or a representative of the owner, came into my hospital room. When I had just barely gained consciousness, I was out for 4 days. I was in a coma for 4 days. And like on the sixth day or something, the guy comes in and he says, "Oh, don't worry, we'll take care of everything for you. We're very sorry." And he gave me all this other bullshit. And I thought, okay, well, that's really good. I don't have to worry about it, paying for anything. I don't have to worry about what's going on. And then, sure enough, they came to me a few days later and said, "Hey, listen, we need this bill paid. You need to pay up until today." And I said, "Well, you need to call this guy here. Here's his phone number." They called him up, and the guy said, "Oh, well, we're only going to pay 30,000 baht." Now, my bill was 150 or something like that, 180. It was more than that. It was, at the time, I think the baht was around 42. It was about 5 grand, the bill. So it was over 200,000 baht. And they said, "Oh, we'll pay 30,000. So I called the guy up and I said, "Hey, what's the deal?" "Oh, well, our insurance is going to pay the 30,000. We're not going to pay anything." And I said, "Dude, you promised me you'd take care of everything, and now you're jerking me around." They didn't care. So when it came time, I went to a lawyer to try to find out how I could sue the guy and get the money. Because there were no fire extinguishers, the smoke alarms didn't work, it was just a clusterfuck, which was typical for here, okay, in my opinion, of course. Got to say that to safeguard my ass. It's distracted, if you know what I mean. I let that one go because it was just too expensive to sue. And the chance of me winning here against someone as powerful as this guy was very slim. So basically, I just had to pay it myself, which sucked. It set me back like a year. But the other time, I was in Thermae, the Thermae coffee shop. It was a long time ago when Thermae was open until 6 in the morning. And there was a guy that had been hassling me. I'd seen him around. He was a bit of a drunk, and I saw him one day, and I was in a bad mood, and I got pissed off. The guy got in my face for no reason. We're walking around in Thermae. If you know about Thermae, it was just like you walked around in a circle, and you stood there for a while. Maybe you talked to somebody, you just kept walking around until you found somebody that you knew or you liked or whatever you want to go home with, and that was it. And so the guy got in my face. I ended up opening up on the guy because he got on my face and he put his hands on me. I opened up on the guy and I knocked him out. And his eye was all bloody and swollen, and knocked two of his teeth out, and his lip was all swollen. He was fucked up. I mean, I put a pounding on him, which was good at the time. I enjoyed it because he fucking deserved it, right? So I was going to walk out the door, but of course there was a cop there who knew me, and he grabbed me from behind as I was walking up to him. He said, no, you can't go. I said, okay. I stood there. I was very polite because I felt like, I was defending myself. Long story short, we go to the police did not like this guy. He because he had a big mouth and he was swearing at them. And, you know, he was angry because I kicked the shit out of him. And so, you know, I'm sitting in the jail. This was at the, I think it was right next to Rajdhaman Stadium. There's a tourist police down there. And I was sitting in there, and the guy had come in, and my wife came in to try to help me. And she saw his face and everything. She started crying. She said, "What did you do? What did you do?" I was like, "Oh, shit, man. You know, maybe I'm in for a little more trouble than I thought." So I stayed the night. And in the morning, my wife, she got a lawyer that was recommended to her by somebody who was like a friend of a friend. The guy comes in. We sit down with the police. The police said, "Oh, this is going to cost you, I think it was, I'm trying to remember how much it was, but said, you know, this is going to cost you $200,000 bond." I said, "$200,000 bond?" I said, "I'm not paying shit." And they said, you know, "You got to pay this or you're going to jail for like 2 years." And I said, "Fuck that." And I said that. I was sitting here at this table. I don't know why I said it. I go, "Fuck that. I ain't paying shit." I said, "You guys are a bunch of corrupt motherfuckers. I'm not giving you a penny." And I don't know that that's really how it was, as much as you're going to pay us and we'll make this go away. We'll forget it. Whatever you want to call it. Corrupt. Whatever. Okay. You got to be careful of the terminology. But anyway, she brought the lawyer in. And the lawyer was in the room. The lawyer basically said, the police got pissed when he said that. They all, "Oh my God, oh, you're no good." Yeah. And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm no good. You're trying to fuck me up the ass, and I'm no good. You're going to put me in jail for something where I'm defending myself, and you're just telling me, oh, well, you can pay your way out of it instead of doing it legally. And I'm the asshole, right? I'm no good." So yeah, I was upset. The lawyer said, let me take care of it. So the lawyer talks to a couple of the police. The police actually came to me and said, "I'm sorry. We shouldn't have done this. It was wrong." I said, "Okay, good. Thank you." And there were no problems. Of course, they threw me in with a room of Nigerians who, you know, were trying to make deals with me the whole time. And when I got out, they wanted me to do this for them and do that for them. I was, you know. And so go to court. Court makes me post a bail bond, 30,000 baht. And every month I had to go in and sign the paperwork. But, you know, I asked the lawyer, I said, "How much is this going to cost? And just tell me up front exactly what it's going to cost. Tell me how much it's going to cost altogether. Don't bullshit me around. Just tell me, because I need to be able to give you the money, and I don't want to have to fucking worry about it later on." And it was something like 15,000 baht or something. I don't remember. But I gave him the money. He's paid. A couple weeks later, he's like, "Oh, Mr. Scott, I'm going to need some more money. I'm going to need some more." I said, "Fuck you. You know what? If you don't want to help me, then you're fired. And I'm going to go to the fucking attorney, whatever it is. The legal counsel, you know, that oversees the lawyers, whatever you call it." So he helped. And the long story short was that I got one of my buddies to come in and say, "Listen, this guy had told me about this guy who was harassing him. He was drunk all the time. My buddy, you know, doesn't drink that much anymore and almost never drinks. He wasn't drunk." And the guy got in his face. And, he, you know, where he comes from, somebody gets in your face and, you know, you get him out of your face. You do what you got to do to protect yourself. And they said, "Okay, that's it, boom. Not guilty. You pay 2,000 baht to the court for court costs, and that's it. And the other guy has to pay too." Well, he had left Thailand. So I paid my 2,000 baht. Like, you know, a week later, I got my 30,000 baht back. But I always remember that lawyer, what a cunt he was. Because after he signed the paper saying that this is how much is due, and we've paid it all, and there's no more monies that are going to be necessary. And then, of course, he came to me, "Oh, give me another 5,000. Then I was like thinking to myself, this prick is going to ask me for 5,000. Then he's going to get another 5,000, and another 5,000, and another 5,000. He's going to fucking bleed me dry. So I was like, fuck this, okay? Take my chances, which is what I did. I you know, rolled the dice and basically told him to fuck off. All right, so let me keep going here. Very interesting case here. Since I started working on this story, a number of foreigners have contacted me to tell me about their experiences in different kinds of fraud in Phuket. In some cases, the property deal they had signed has not been honored, but only one other case matches Rance's in almost every detail. Colin Vard also invested about $1 million in Phuket. Why he did that, I don't fucking know. After a successful career in Dublin as an author and part-time owner of a clothing factory, he lost a total of 8 properties over a similar time period. In some cases, the money lender who exploited Rance's wife were involved. So it's the same group of people, which is one reason why I don't want to live in Phuket. You know, my wife has said, oh, I can get a job paying this much more money and do that and do this. We could move here. I'm like, fuck this. You know, and I went in for a job once several years ago to work for the Phuket Gazette. And I got down, it was me and one other guy. And I was actually happy that I didn't get the job because I didn't want to deal with this shit and deal with these kind of people always trying to fuck you around, like the motorbike drivers, the taxi drivers, everybody in the city, in my opinion. You know, not everybody, of course not everybody, but many of the people in the city, they just look at you as a means to an end. You are their cash cow. And I didn't like that, and I don't like it ever. And it's not about the money so much as the principle of it, you know. Let's see here. Varg's Thai partner, the mother of his son, had been sentenced to 17 years in prison for the fraud, but evidence showing the involvement of several other people has been ignored by the police. Vard has accused some police officers in Phuket of tampering with his criminal complaints by removing evidence from his files so the cases fail in court. And he has discovered that the cousin of one police chief actually ended up with one of his stolen properties. In desperation, in March, Vard went with his 2 children into the central branch of a Thai bank he believes is connected to the fraud and mounted a sit-down protest. He has done the same outside of the police headquarters in Bangkok, blocking the traffic. Each time he has been promised a proper investigation. But after 5 years, there has been no visible progress. Gee, you think? Here's the thing. You can't have high expectations here. Okay? Because if you do, you're going to set yourself up for, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. The Thai police have assured the BBC that they are working on the case. The deputy governor in Phuket also promised Vard and the BBC in February that his case would be taken up, but to date, nothing has happened. Ian Rance has a new wife now, and they have a young baby girl. His main priority, he says, is to provide a proper home for the 4 children. So this chick just ran away from her 3 children, the first wife. She just bailed on them. What a piece of shit, man. And put them through school, with the boy's mother in prison and his funds exhausted. This is a huge challenge. He cannot even consider returning to the UK because of the requirements regarding income and savings, which in his case are now insufficient. I asked what he would say to those considering retiring and buying property in Phuket. Don't come here. The system of law is nowhere near as strong as you think it is going to be. There is no protection for you, and there are gangs of people victimizing you. The lawyers have very little in the way of ethics or professionalism. Now, this is not me saying this. This is what this guy said in the article. Thousands of foreigners have settled in Phuket. Now, here's what the author of this article wrote. Thousands of foreigners have settled in Phuket without serious difficulties. But if things do go wrong, they may find it hard to get help from the police or the judicial system. I got to say that something else that happened to me when I was in Phuket, I got into a fight with a guy. Another fight. This is a long time ago. I was drinking at the time. But I wasn't drunk on this particular day. But I had a problem with some lady boy who was mouthing off to me. And I said something like, you know, fuck off or something. And she ran out from behind the bar and was going to come after me, and I cracked her with an elbow, and then this foreigner came. She went down, or he went down, whatever the fuck it is, and then this foreigner comes. It was a big American guy. He comes over. He's a big boy, and I cracked him with an elbow and cut him open over his eye, and he got on top of me, and I got him into a, you know, I grabbed him, got him into a guard. He was in my guard. I just put my arms around him and held him there until he moved a little bit. He got impatient and he moved, and I pushed out and got away, and I just kind of ran away. He was a big dude. And so then the thing is like 2 days later, somebody came to where I was working, and they said, Mr. Mallon, Mr. Scott Mallon, and they said, we are the police. And I laughed. I said, yeah, right, you're the police. They're in like a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. You know? And I was like, they showed their badge. I said, oh, shit. Then I was like, what's the deal? What did I do, you know? I didn't even remember the fight because I didn't think it was a big deal. You know? Stupid me. So I walk out to the street, and I see in the back of this song towel that I guess the police had rented, the guy, the foreigner, he was an American guy who I had hit, and he's got a big bandage over his eye, and his wife, his Thai wife, and so they put me in the back with him, said, no problems, you don't make any problems. I said, no, man, there's no problem. So we started talking, I told him what happened, that actually the woman that he thought I was hitting was a lady boy. He thought it was a lady, so he was, you know, protecting her honor, I guess. And we started talking. We get to the police station. The police are like, hey, you got to come up with $40,000. Then you can get out of this. You know, they were going to cut him, you know, like $10,000. They were going to divide the rest up by themselves. And I'm assuming, of course. And so, you know, I had been talking to the guy, and I said, you know, listen, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do this. And, you know, he said, listen, you're an American. I'm an American. You seem like a nice guy. I believe what you said. My nose has been itching a lot. I can only think that means I'm coming into a large sum of money. That would be great. But anyway, I'm not going to invest it in Thailand, though. At least I won't invest anything that, you know, if I can afford to lose it, then maybe I'll invest. But if I can't afford to lose it, if it's going to hurt even a little bit, then call me conservative. Anyway, I was talking to this guy. The guy started talking to his wife. He said, listen, I got insurance. My insurance paid for the hospital bill. Didn't cost me anything. He said, you know, I don't like being cut, but, you know, seemed like a nice guy. I'll let it go. So the police were trying to get me for money, and he's saying, no, I'm not going to do anything. I don't want anything. And they were irritated, to say the least. Don't you do anything else again. You need to leave. I said, okay. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Cop. And I left. That was the end of that. And, you know, these are the kind of things that can happen. Like I said before, for me, I try to really, I mean, I do these videos and everything, but, you know, I do podcasts or whatever. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm real well known, but, you know, from being involved in boxing and from everything that I've done here. You know, I mean, a few people know me here, but generally, I try to live a very peaceful, quiet life. I just don't want to be fucked with. And I don't want anybody cheating me. And for that reason, I refuse to invest a large sum of money. And this guy's saying, hey, what's my advice? Don't invest. Don't invest a huge amount of money. Don't invest. He's even saying, don't retire. Now, I don't know if I would go that far, but you got to remember something. If you come here, you are not living in your country. You do not have the same rights as the people in your, as if you were living in your own country. If I live in the United States, I know that while I may not be an equal to some people, I know that the chance of me getting a fair shake is probably better than it will be here when it comes to something about money or anything like that. Now, there was a guy that I know. I wonder if he was the same guy. I don't think he was. I saw some pictures. I don't think it's the same guy. I was sitting on a bus coming from somewhere, and the guy started talking to me and telling me how he started some businesses. Somehow his wife finagled it to where she put the businesses in her name, and he ended up losing almost everything. Now, he had all the documents, all the papers, all the phone calls, all the emails. He had everything. And he ended up taking her to court. Now, I don't know what happened with him, but, you know, it does happen. Thailand is not some place that is immune to crime. And while I still think that it's safer generally than, say, like living in L.A. or, you know, East L.A. or Watts or, you know, like in New York in some places, I think you really got to watch yourself. Because if you piss the wrong people off, if you have a large amount of money and they want it, and there's a way that they can get it, you're in trouble, you know. And I think that it's not just Thailand. I think it's just there are many foreign. I would say Venezuela, Costa Rica, Ecuador, all these places. You still got to be careful. And this is the thing: if you're not careful, you might end up getting screwed. So it's something to consider. For me, the one thing that I know is that I will never, ever, ever invest a huge amount of money. You know, I'm not going to invest, say, 50% of my cash or 75% of the cash that I have, you know, or my life savings. I'm not going to invest it and start to buy a whole bunch of businesses and land and this and that. I don't care what the deal is, because what is my recourse? I ask myself that. Where is my recourse better? And my recourse is better in the United States, in my opinion. I would rather buy land in the United States, and my wife is perfectly acceptable. She's perfectly okay with this. When I say, you know, yeah, let's go to the United States, you know, we can have a piece of land there or something, and we can come back here, she's... You know, she's got her mother's property and a little house, and you know, staying here. If we were to live here part time, wouldn't be a big deal. And for me, that's a good way. Now, I don't know about other people. Other people, they feel like they got to live here and they got to buy this and buy that, and I don't really recommend it. This article was just one other reason why. The thing is that a lot of times I think people put themselves in a position. It's not necessarily, oh, well, it's Thailand. I don't always think that. I think that what happens is people don't know about the country, don't know about the culture, don't know how things are done, don't know what questions to ask, what to look for. And then they get themselves involved in something that they need to know these things. And then they get screwed. And they're like, well, you know, but they still don't know what's going on. And, you know, this is the thing, is there's a lot of people who they feel like, oh, I've been talking about this lately. Oh, well, you know, I want to find a good Thai girl. How am I going to do that online? What's the best thing? What would you recommend? Well, guess what? You're not. The chance of it happening is very slim. And the only way that you're going to know is time, and even in time. This guy was married to her for 7 years, okay? Now, I've been married for, I've been with her for 16 years. I think we've been married for 13 and a half, something like that. You know, there comes a point where, you do need to trust, but, like, it's like, for me, I don't want to ever put myself in a position where I'm destitute. Life is already hard enough. I don't want to put myself in a position where I'm completely destitute and I have nothing, no backup, no other way of making money. I mean, you know, and I'm living here now. It's a little different. I got kids. I got a couple of kids, and my kids are older. And first, I don't think that my wife would do anything detrimental to me as far as, putting me on the street with something that I put every penny that I have into. She's more like, I don't want your money, I'll do it myself. That's more like what she's like. But, speaking from someone who is looking at from the outside in, I think that whether you're married or not, you always got to make sure that you personally have a way to get out of a situation or deal with a problematic situation, which means having a little stash of your own. I think that's very important. So that's something else to remember, you know. And, you know, the thing is that I don't really want to keep my money in Thailand. I keep some of my money. I keep some money in Thailand. I keep what I need. And, you know, the rest of the money could be somewhere that I view as a little more safe. And I personally don't like to keep, I mean, I have like 10 bank accounts. Now, some of them don't have a freaking dime in them. Well, they all have at least a dime, but some of them don't have much in them. But I like to spread it out, you know. And that way, if anything happens at one bank, I got a backup in another bank, or I got a backup bank in another country, or whatever it is. So that helps. But I really thought this was an interesting article. So that's all I got. Pretty sad situation, if you ask me. But hey, I really like this shirt. I just got this shirt. It says, I don't hate people. I just feel better when they're not around. It's a Charles Bukowski quote. I guess it came from one of his books or one of his quotes. I don't remember it in any of his books. I've read all of his books now. But great writer. I really like him. Anyway, that's all I got. Until next time, I'm Scott. I'm an American in Bangkok. Choke me, that jerk and mine.